I stepped out of youth ministry, and I started winding it down in 2002. We'll just call it a life-changing event was about to happen. So Deb and I thought it was time for me to find a different mode of service because it takes a lot of time. Probably the last time I was actively leading a youth ministry, it was probably around 2004. And the world has changed quite a bit. I found that video and started watching it, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not sure I could do this today. I'm not sure I could get back into the world where there's that much scrutiny over your picture, where you're accepted by how many times somebody clicks it that they liked it. That's a hard world to minister in. And you know what I feel for the teenagers that are struggling today? Because you do want to be fitting in. You want to be part of the group, part of the crowd. And that's difficult. Very, very, very difficult. So this isn't a teenage sermon series, though. Before you say, you know what, selfie-centered, I don't do selfies, I don't even own a smartphone, just so you know, this isn't about a smartphone. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to be that smart to understand how this sermon series is going to work. Let me give you a little brief history of the camera to make sure that you understand you're part of the selfie generation. The pinhole camera was developed in the early Middle Ages. So as long as you've been around since King Arthur's time, this is for you. Silver plate cameras came along in 1839. Paper film cameras in 1885. 1913 brought us the first portable camera, which means no tripod needed. The first automatic camera for the common person came along in 1938. 1948 gave us the first Instamatic camera. 1988, the first digital camera. And in 2003, the front-facing phone camera hit the market for the very first time, retailing it more than I could afford. And well, the idea of the modern-day selfie came into being. But you know what? That's not really the start. You see, while it didn't become an official word, and when I say an official word, which means you can use it in Scrabble, that defines an official word, it did not become an official word until 2013. The idea of a selfie goes way back. After all, what we're talking about is just a photograph of oneself taken by oneself. You see, the history of the selfie goes way, way, way back. Maybe some of you guys knew this person. 1839. Robert Cornelius took the very first selfie with one of those silver-plated cameras. How about in 1865? Felix Nadir photographs the first revolving selfie. Now, he didn't have one of those fancy landscape cameras like we have now. He used this wonderful technology called stop motion, which means he took a frame, and then he moved, and he took a frame, and he just kept going, and he put it all back together, the very first moving selfie. For those who think that the X generation created the mirror selfie, I'm terribly sorry. You're about 100 years too late. 1914, Grand Duchess Anastasia Lakeva takes the very first reported mirror selfie, which means she took a camera, stood in front of a mirror, and she took a picture of herself. In 1966, Buzz Aldrin took the most out-of-the-world selfie you're ever going to see, as he actually took the very first selfie in outer space. And by the way, that one you can actually find at the Smithsonian Institute. In 2002, the word selfie first appeared online. Wow, can you believe that's been 17 years ago since this word entered our culture? The very first time it was used on Instagram as part of a hashtag in 2011. And by the way, if I haven't convinced you that you're part of the selfie generation and that this sermon series isn't too young for you, just so you know, the very, very first selfie was actually taken in 1433 when Jan van Eyck paints the very first self-portrait by standing in front of a mirror and gradually painting themselves. So just so you know, the idea of a selfie has been around for a very, very, very long time. See, the facts are simple. A selfie, again, is just a picture of yourself taken by yourself. And you don't even have to be by yourself for it to work, but by definition, you cannot take a selfie of somebody else, okay? I don't care what the commercial said. It doesn't work that way. You can't take a selfie of somebody else. And you know what else? Nobody else can take a selfie of you, because the entire idea behind this idea of a selfie is that, well, it's centered around you. You're holding the camera. You're selecting the angle. You're getting the light right. You decide who's in the picture. You decide which way you're going to turn. You decide which side is the best profile for you. You decide all of this, because the idea behind a selfie is just centered around you. And that's where this sermon series is going to kind of get. We're going to kind of hit on this idea. Because in the church, we churchy people like to use wonderful phrases like, it's all about Jesus. We use that. We love to sing songs about how great God is. We love to talk about how committed we are to Jesus. But let's be very honest. The picture we take shows a different reality. We're doing this for self. And just so you know, that's not exactly a bad starting point. Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 29, after all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body just as Christ does the church. So the idea that you start this entire Christian relationship out of something for self, I want to be in the middle. I want God to focus on my needs, my wants, my desires, what's wrong with me. God, I want you to help me. I want you to fix me. I want you to save me. That is not a bad place to start your relationship. But if you stay there, well, there's going to be problems. Matter of fact, I can identify two problems right off the bat that you're going to struggle with when it comes to a selfie-centered Christian relationship. These are from the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 16, verse 24. It says, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must. There's that word again. Aren't you tired of that word yet? Must? I mean, it's kind of linked the last four sermon series together. These are not options in our life. These are things we must do if we're going to be followers of Christ. And Jesus tells us we must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. The problem is, Jesus flat out told us it is impossible to follow him and serve self. In fact, he says to be a follower of him, you must turn the camera off of yourself and deny yourself. And then on top of that, to be a follower, you must be willing to suffer for him. I want to tell you something. I've been doing this church thing for like 39 years. Yeah, I'm that old, really. I've been doing this church thing for a long time. I have been in different forms of leadership, and I have been at different phases in my life in the church. And you know what? Every time I hear this particular verse read, taught, preached, the concept still goes right over my head. It blows right past me. Because this idea that to follow Christ, it can't be about me while I say all the right things. So the reality is that who do I want it to be about? Me. That's just the way it works. And that creates the second problem. Luke chapter 9, verse 25 says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? And I read that, and you get what Jesus is saying. It is entirely possible for you to lose yourself while trying to find yourself. And that sounds confusing. But you have to understand, in the process of trying to define myself by the worldly view, I could actually lose who I'm supposed to be in the godly view. I can get so obsessed with the picture and what I'm trying to make my life look like that I can actually lose myself trying to find it. And well, those are some deep concepts. And those are kind of like, we're going to call those the tent stakes of this particular sermon series. As a matter of fact, this might be a good time. Remember, I've been encouraging you to maybe memorize some scripture. Maybe these are the first two you want to put on your list to try to commit these to memory so you can understand the parameters that we're dealing with when we're talking about a true relationship with Jesus. Now, we're going to go a little less shallow than that. We're not going to stay so deep. I don't want everybody to go home with a headache, and I certainly don't want to put you to sleep, and I don't want to lose you. So we've got some basic things that we're going to try to establish over the next 5 weeks as we look at this sermon series called Selfie-Centered. And the first thing we're going to look at is, well, we're going to look at the selfie-centered life. What is it? What does it look like to be selfie-centered? Then we're going to see the dangers of living a selfie-centered life, because we think if we can just make it all about me, my life is going to be all good. I mean, wouldn't your life be a whole lot better if everybody did things the way you wanted them to do and they always served you and you were always the focal point? Wouldn't that fix all of your problems? No, there's some dangers in that. We're going to figure out how to refocus our lives on Jesus. So we're going to talk about how to turn that camera off of ourselves and how to turn it more into a God-focused, centered life. And well, to accomplish this, we're going to look at a life that was totally out of focus. Now, I had this really cool idea to make this a sermonopsity, like a little documentary thing. I thought about finding a volunteer in the church, and we just follow you around for a few weeks, and we just take a camera, and then we would just photograph your life, and then we come here on Sunday morning, and we just pick it apart. Wouldn't that have been a cool sermon? How many people would have volunteered for that? I mean, that way I could, we got a hand that got raised. You know, I could stand by your bed when you wake up in the morning. I could say, good morning. And we can just keep recording your life and recording your life and recording your life. Be careful how you raise your hand around here, because you never know what I might do next. So I couldn't really think of anybody to be the volunteer for that. So I went out in Scripture, and I found us a volunteer. His name is Jacob. And we're going to take a look at the life of Jacob. If you want to follow along, you can grab your Bible. You can make your way to Genesis chapter 25. I'll be there in a few minutes. But I want to tell you about Jacob, because today we're going to look at some broad snapshots of his life, and then we're going to come back in over the next 4 weeks, and we're going to look at those snapshots a little more in depth, and we're going to talk all about those pictures. Because you see, Jacob, the name actually means deceiver. When they named him, when he came into this world, and his dad looked at him and decided to give him a name, and they called him Jacob. Remember, we're dealing in Hebrew culture, so the names always had something to do with what the dad saw in the person when he named him. And they named him Jacob, which means deceiver. And, well, this was an appropriate name, because Jacob seemed to always have a problem with the idea of truth. He was perhaps what you would consider the Bible's very first con man. After all, he literally conned his brother out of his birthright. He took advantage of his dad's poor eyesight in the elder years of his life, and he conned his dad into giving him his blessing that was intended for his brother by pretending to be his brother. You see, Jacob had this huge problem with truth, and you know who Jacob had the most problem with telling the truth to? Himself. He convinced himself that everything was all right. He always had things under control. And ironically, in that verse that we read in Luke chapter 21, in Luke, the verse here says, ironically, he gained the whole world he was after. He did. He got the blessing. He got the property. He got everything. But the funny thing is in the process, he lost himself, and he never got to enjoy any of it. He never did. He was never satisfied. He was never content. Jacob never had enough. It was always that next big thing, according to Samsung. The next thing you're looking for. His deception would eventually cut him off from his family and put him on the run. And so the man that looked out to find everything found himself all alone in the world. And well, this selfie-centered life for Jacob, it began with an attitude. It began with the idea that what Jacob had to eventually see is God never blesses what we pretend to be. See, Jacob was the big pretender. He became whatever he needed to be in whatever situation there was. Whatever it was, Jacob could adapt to the situation. He was like a little chameleon. Wherever you put him, he'd get lots of likes. People liked Jacob. People wanted Jacob. Wherever Jacob went, things seemed to be prosperous. The problem is Jacob was pretending. He didn't have the real relationship. In fact, what he had was a me-first mentality. Genesis chapter 24 through 26, this is what we read. When the time came for her, this would be Jacob's mom, to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first came out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping at Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. God bless Isaac and Rebekah, 60 years old. No, Benji, no more kids. We're done, okay? No brothers and sisters for you. We are done. What you guys is enough. But as we look at this picture, maybe this is the best picture we will ever see of Jacob and of ourselves. You get it. From the moment he came into this world, Jacob was grasping to be first. Can't you just see the wrestling match going on inside of mom's womb as birth is about to happen? And you're trying to be first, and he didn't quite make it. And so he came out, and he was still clutching a hold to his brother's heel, desperately trying to get to the front of the line. His grasping eventually literally caused him to marry the wrong woman. Now, not the wrong kind of woman. In Jacob's total life, he ended up actually marrying the wrong woman. He was supposed to marry one woman, and he ended up marrying her sister instead because of this self-centered attitude that he had. We'll look at that story in a few weeks. He ended up an indentured servant to his uncle, trying to earn what he had been freely given. Funny, he spent all these years trying to earn this woman, then he married the wrong one. Isn't that amazing? He eventually got a hold of God wrestling with him to try to force a blessing. Can you imagine this picture? God finally shows up in person in his life, and what was Jacob's instinct for it? I'm going to wrestle with you. I'm going to get what I want out of this, and I'm not going to let you go until I get what I want. That's me first. But you know what Jacob learned all through his life? Something I don't think we've learned yet. I know this because I know where I live my life, and what Jacob eventually learned is me first is miserable. When I always have to be at the front of the line, when I always have to have my guard up, when I'm always trying to leap over the person in front of me, I'm always trying to be the center of attention, to get the most likes, to get the most pictures, to get the most there, to get the most that. When it's always about me, I am a miserable individual because I'm never happy. I'm just looking for the next thing that's going to be about me. You know, Jacob wasn't the only one that came to this conclusion. Solomon came to it. Now, if you don't know who Solomon is, he was the king of Israel at one point. And most historians agree that he was probably the richest man that ever lived. Surely he would be happy. He had a kingdom, and he had hundreds of wives. He had hundreds of kids. He had all of the money in the vault, anything at his disposal. And this is what he wrote at the end of his life in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 8. There was a man all alone. He had neither son or brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling? He asked. And when I am, and why I'm depriving myself of enjoyment, this too is meaningless, a miserable business. Trying to serve yourself is going to make you miserable. It just is. I mean, we can say it doesn't, and we can say that it's all going to be okay, and it's all going to come up in the wash, but let's face it. We hang out too long looking at the pictures of ourselves. Didn't you catch it on that video? The guy said, I posted, and if not enough people hit it soon enough, I wonder, should I take it down? Should I take another picture? Didn't you like the picture? The girl said, you know what? I can't just take a selfie. I have to prepare to take a selfie. I don't know what you do. By the way, the one I took earlier, it took me all of 2 minutes. I walked down in front of the mirror and went, done. I walked back up. I was done. But you have to prepare. The one girl said, you know what? When I take one, I don't just take one. I take about 20 to make sure I get the right one. That's a me first mentality. And it's going to make us miserable because it's never going to be good enough. It's going to require our life to change. Now, here's the thing I need you to know. This ain't going to be easy. You're expecting a cutesy little sermon series because it's got all the pictures and it's going to have kind of a fun little wrapper around it. This is not going to be one of those easy sermon series. There's going to be conflict when we start talking about changing the me first mentality. Matter of fact, Genesis chapter 32, verses 23 through 29, coming back into Jacob's story. After he, that would be Jacob, has sent them, that would be his family, across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched, and he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man says, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Jacob says, "Please tell me your name." But he, being the man, replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. Now, here's the funny thing, before you think Jacob is a teenager, whenever we see the paintings of this, we see this strapping young man, and he's all good looking, and he's ruggedly built, and we think Jacob's a young man. You get, when this event happened in Jacob's life, he was 97 years old. So Jacob had been on this earth, this planet, for about 100 years by the time he had this match with God. Man, you talk about a late bloomer. I think he could have probably got his act together a little sooner. But by the time Jacob had this battle, he was wealthy. Then you catch it, when he got to the river, he had to send over all of his possessions. And he had to have slaves to carry his possessions because he had so many. So he had all the wealth in the universe. He had a family. As a matter of fact, by this point, he had four wives. Remember, he married the wrong one the first time, so he went back and corrected that and then married the right one, and then he picked up another couple along the way. So he had four wives and 11 kids and hopefully a man cave somewhere to get along by himself, because that's a lot of family. But you know, the amazing thing was he was still struggling with selfie issues at 97 years old, with all of the money and all of the family and all of the blessings and all of the things. What is Jacob still looking for? A blessing. He started back on this journey to catch up with the brother that he deceived. And this is the story in 19 through 21, and it'll give you a good look at Jacob's mentality at 97 years old. He also instructed the second and the third and all the others who followed the herds, "You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, 'Your servant Jacob is coming behind us.' For he thought, 'I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he will receive me.' So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp." Do you see it? Jacob's still trying to buy his way out of the situations. He's still trying to manipulate. He's not relying on God. What's he saying? "I know how to fix my problem with my estranged family. I'll buy them off. I'll send them lots of presents and lots of gifts. I'll buy them the latest thing. And surely they'll get the gifts, and they'll be so enamored by what I've given them that, you know what, by the time I show up, they'll just love me because of who I am." That was the Jacob mentality. That was that selfie-centered mentality. But this conflict with God that happened, it changed Jacob. And as we begin to talk about the changes Jacob had to overcome, had to become that night, I want you to see a few things. And the first thing is, it was a one-on-one thing. Did you catch that? I want you to notice, God waited for Jacob to be alone. He didn't try to meet up with Jacob when Jacob had all of his friends around. He didn't try to meet up with Jacob when Jacob had all of his possessions. God waited until Jacob was all by himself. You know, we did this series called the 40 Days of Prayer, and we tried to help you build what was called a private time prayer life with God. Are you understanding the importance of that? Because this selfie-centered life, until you're willing to get alone with God, it's never going to change. If you think you can change it through group therapy, by the way, that's what we call this. This is, you think you can come once a week to a group therapy session, and you can sit in a group and listen to somebody that you pay to talk to you about what's wrong with your life, and then you can take it home and you can go back and apply that to your life, and things are going to get better. Let me just tell you something. I'm not that good of a preacher. I'm not. I'm honestly not that good. I don't have enough skill to change your life. I can give you some information. I can give you some things to think about. But ultimately, this relationship with God, this thing, is between you and God. You're going to have to be willing to get one-on-one and look at God and say, God, what about this relationship? Now, here's the good news. God came to Jacob in the form of a man. Now, I'm not telling you to expect God to show up at your front door. As a matter of fact, if he does, I might be a little worried. Don't say it's impossible, but just please make sure it really is God. Ask for something. I don't know. Ask for a sign. Ask. I don't know what you do, but I'm not expecting God to show up. And the reason I'm not expecting him to show up at your front door is because he's already done that. We celebrated communion earlier, and you understand that was the celebration of Jesus come to this planet. He came to us in the form of a man to meet our greatest needs. And I'm not expecting a part two or a do-over or a sequel. But you do understand the importance of part of this is that God came to Jacob in a form that he could understand. When Jacob was ready to be alone with God, God didn't overwhelm Jacob with a bright light, with a bunch of clouds, with the pyrotechnic show, with great pictures. He just said, let me come to you one-on-one, face-to-face. Let's talk about the way you're living your life. That's kind of a scary thought, right? I don't want to be alone with God. I mean, face-to-face is hard. I don't like to be face-to-face with most people. Conflict is a lot easier when you can put a telephone line between you, isn't it? It's a less fear. It's less complicated. But we have to be willing to get in front of God. And the other thing I want you to see in this event with Jacob, it was a one-night event, but it was not an overnight process. You get it? All of this happened in one night. This event where Jacob wrestled with the man, it happened in one night. It says they wrestled all night long. But I do want you to see, when Jacob woke up the next morning, he was just as broken as he was before. You see, this is a process, and that was one event. And I think this is one thing that we kind of mess up in our Christian life. See, if I come up and start talking about your Christian life, maybe you'll give me an event. Well, I was baptized, and you give me the date you were baptized. Oh, I've been coming to church since, and you give me some date. Don't you know my family were like founding members of this church? We base our relationship on an event in our past, not the process of us moving toward God. And it makes us self-centered. We're living on our laurels. We're living on the things that we think we've done. We're living on what we think is enough. And God says, you know what? There is nothing that's enough. What I want you to do is to get in a relationship, a real relationship with me. And it's not going to be an overnight thing. Matter of fact, let me tell you how long it's going to take the rest of your life. From the moment you decide to follow Christ, all the way until the day they put you back into the ground, it's going to take the rest of your life. You're going to struggle with these issues. You're probably thinking, that sounds depressing. Yeah, but you don't have to struggle with them alone anymore. That's what you get out of Christianity. It's the idea that you're not doing this alone anymore. You're not by your selfie. Sometimes in this process, I just want to give you the warning, you're going to get hurt, possibly scarred. As Jacob wrestled with God to get his blessing, as Jacob wrestled with the things that were going on in his life, as Jacob thought he could win, well, he got an advantage, so what happened? It says the man touched his hip and it wrenched, which means basically it broke. And Jacob walked with a limp for the rest of his life. God never healed it back the way it was. It was a reminder that, you know what, you can wrestle with God if you like. You can do this the hard way. But you do understand, if you're actually going to follow God, at some point, just like that verse says that we have to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him, at some point, there's probably going to be a little pain. There's probably going to be a little anxiety. There's going to be a little suffering. Everything isn't always going to be roses and sunshine and rainbows. That's not the way this works. And then I want you to see that God will ask you to take a look at who you think you are. The man looked at Jacob and said, who are you? What's your name? He said, Jacob. I wonder if Jacob ever had a problem saying his own name, because every time he said it, he had to be reminded. Deceiver. Liar. Every time he said his name, he had to be reminded of the things that he'd done in his past. Think he ever got tired of saying his own name? Jacob. Yeah, I'm the deceiver. I'm the one that'll take advantage of you if you give me a chance. I'm the one that will lie straight to your face and then do the exact thing I told you I wasn't going to do. Yeah, that's me. I'm Jacob. But he identifies himself to the man. And I guess it would have been easy for God to say, yeah, I see who you are, and just walk away. But that's the amazing thing about Jacob's story. Because God, he does not leave you where he found you. When Jacob said his name, my name is Jacob, immediately the man looked at the man and said, yeah, you are Jacob, you are the deceiver, but you will be Israel, which means the wrestler with God, the man that contended, the man that fought. And he said, that's who you will be, that's who I see. Now I want to let you know something. This name did not stick with Jacob right away. He went back and still kept calling himself Jacob. Well, look at the story when God actually finally got Jacob to stop calling himself Jacob and start calling himself Israel. We'll do that in a few weeks also. But here's what I want you to see. When you get into this relationship, when you turn the camera off of yourself and toward God, God's not going to leave you where he found you. He'll start any place. I don't care what you've done in your life, what you've done in your past. God will start anywhere. There is no sin, no thing you have done in your life that God can't start with. But just so you know, he's not going to leave you there. He's going to walk with you every single day. And you're going to work on this picture, this selfie-centered image, as he gradually wrestles for you to get that camera turned off of yourself and onto everybody else. Now, here's the good news. Jacob wrestled for his blessing, and he got it. I'm going to go over to the story of Moses. Now, Moses is a descendant of Jacob. And this is what it says in Exodus chapter 3, verses 14 through 15. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you would say to the Israelites, named from Israel, who was Jacob. I am has sent me to you. God said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord God of your fathers, of the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Jacob asked for God's name, and you notice he never gave it to him, but later he reveals it to one of his hands. He says, I am. I am. You know what that means? I exist. I am today. I am yesterday. I am tomorrow. I am, and you can count on me to always be who I said I was going to be. You see, that's the point. If I begin to turn my image toward God and away from myself, I've got a fixed point. But here's the deal. Is it time to refocus your picture? Let me tell you what God's not going to do, okay? I guarantee you this. If you've got your camera turned towards yourself and you're totally living a self-centered life, God is not going to come down. He's not going to jerk the camera out of your hand, smack you upside the head and say, what is wrong with you? He's not going to do it. He'll come alongside you and he'll make promises. And he'll come alongside you and he'll work with you. He'll walk with you. He'll minister to you. And he's trying to lead you to do what? Turn the camera yourself. See, that's just God. This is your choices, your decisions. How you live your life is your responsibility. All God's going to do is give you the guidance and say, you know what, if you do it my way, life is going to be so much better. Life is going to be so much less complicated, and you're never going to have to walk with this alone. But the only one that can turn the camera, it's you. That's the idea of a selfie-centered life. It's your camera. You're holding it. You decide who's in the picture. You decide who's going to be the focus.